All right, are you ready for some trivia?
I am ready.
All right, when Ving Rhames heard that a remake of Dawn of the Dead 1978 was in production, he tracked down the producers to make sure that he would be in the film. Reportedly, his reasoning behind it was that he knows for sure that the black guy survives to the end of that movie, so he wanted to be part of this one, given the character should last till the end as well.
Yeah. I mean, they made it to the end, but then it was the end for them.
Yeah. Literally in both movies. For the scene where Anna stitches Kenneth's wounds, the director hired a real nurse for the close-ups. She misunderstood the director's directions to go deeper and inadvertently puncture Ving Rhames' skin and stitched the prosthesis to his arm. He didn't say anything until after the scene was done filming, and the director thought that the blood was merely a really good effect. So he was really being stitched, and it was really bleeding.
The actress did that to him?
The nurse that they hired to stand in for Anna
actually wow, because
two movies. That's funny that the original movie had a scene where one of the actors bit over the prosthesis and actually bit the woman's arm, and in this one they actually stitched through the prosthesis into his arm.
And he didn't say. I wouldn't have been comfortable because I would have been like, I don't know if this is really sanitary or not. Maybe it was, you know?
Maybe if they hired a real nurse, but still, like, ugh.
Yeah, that's the thing is I would be afraid that it wouldn't be. And so I'd be like, cut, guys. Like, raise my arm, like, Raina, what? Hi. She's stitching through my arm. And not only that, I would have been like, ow!
Which, by the way, we didn't bring this up whenever we were discussing the movie, but did you think that he was bit because of the blood on his arm or that he would – we know he wasn't bit, but did you think that – because the way I saw it, I thought that the cut and him being in the same water with a zombie when I first saw it, I was like, he's fucking dead, you know, because he's got that, like, you know, the germs are in there, you know, they've entered the cut. I thought that when I first watched it, and then whenever they didn't go that route, I'm like, it's a little weird, like, because I've always thought that 28 Days Later did it better to where, like, one drop of blood from an infected zombie was enough, you know?
Yeah,
So what were your thoughts on that?
It really just depends. You kind of would have to see him. It would have been cool to see him go through it, but obviously we saw that. It didn't happen. You're like, okay, you absolutely have to be bitten. Maybe it's something with the saliva. I'm not sure how I would have thought about that. I always just associate it with a bite. So for me, a little simpleton like me, it worked. But what did that make me think of just now? I think I just lost it. Made me think of The Walking Dead. Remember when they were trying to dig a swollen, bloated zombie out of a well?
Yep.
And I was like, why are you trying to do that? That's gross. I'm not drinking that water.
Yeah, I don't know how they could purify that water after that zombie's, like, rotted in there and actually make it. I mean, because it's still water. It's not like it's not going to move downstream, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I kind of was at with it. I was like, okay, like, what do you think is going to happen here? Like, how do you think this is going to work?
It's funny you mention that, too, because I saw an article about The Walking Dead, and the deluxe reissue of one of, like, issue 87 or something like that, which has Rick coming up with the idea of the zombie guts, like, you know, the zombie poncho that he used to, like, get, you know, through the zombie hordes, like, as long as they smelled like the zombies didn't recognize them, but then the rain came down and then the zombies found them.
Yeah.
There's a short little mini comic that they've added to the end of that new version of the story that basically goes, that makes fun of that whole concept because it has this, it's just two pages, but it has like this character who tries the same thing in an apartment building, and because of the exposure to his eyes and his mouth, I guess he ends up turning into one.
That's kind of cool, because I was thinking about that too. I was like, it rained, water would have gotten into their eyes, you know?
Yep.
I did like the concept of it, though. I'm not going to lie. And they reused that in Warm Bodies.
They did, because that's how he kept her from being recognized. But I mean, I don't mind it, but at the same time, I think that the idea that, you have to protect your eyes, because I've always, anytime I see in a zombie movie where they're hacking up the zombies and like the zombie blood is like splashing them across the face, I'm like, how is that not getting into your body? Like, I mean, it's directly in your eyes.
Oh, yeah.
That is how you pass about every virus in existence, because you touch it with your hand and then you rub your eyes, because humans do that without even thinking. They rub their eyes all throughout the day, and that's where you introduce the virus.
Yeah, which is weird, because a bite will obviously kill you from infection within, you know, a certain amount of time. But in The Walking Dead, we find out, but we don't. It's not like officially said, but basically everybody has the disease. They just have to die for it to, everyone's going to turn into a zombie.
They basically are trying to overexplain Romero's universe. Yeah. So in Romero's universe, if you get bit, you die, you become a zombie. But they go ahead and say that everybody's already infected with the zombie or the resurrection or Lazarus virus, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That makes you come back. It's just that the bite is so deadly, it kills you quickly or something. There's something about, I guess it's almost like one of those, it's not the Gila monster, but whatever that, the one monster, the one dragon or whatever that's on that one island, its mouth is just filled with bacteria, and if it bites you, you're dead. Like, I'm blanking on the name of it, but I think it's like one of those.
Okay, I got a random situation. Question. How does rabies work?
Komodo dragon, that's what I'm thinking
of.
Oh,
God, those.
Yeah, that's how they kill. One. They've got, there's bacteria all in their mouth, and it kills you when they bite you.
That makes sense. Now, is rabies similar? Can you get rabies in your eye, like a fluid of rabies, and then you have rabies?
I don't think anybody's directly, like, killed something with rabies and sprinkled it in their eyeballs, so yeah. That's an interesting question, but... Here's something I didn't realize till the other day, and I don't know if this is medically sound. I just saw it, and it sounded like it could be medically sound. Apparently, the vitreous fluid in your eyeballs is actually protecting your body, your eyes, against from your immune system.
Oh, okay.
And maybe that's the reason, and I think it's a tear duct that allows the viruses to enter the body, but apparently... That fluid behind your eyes is the barrier between your immune system and your eyes, because if it wasn't there, supposedly your immune system would eat your eyeballs.
Yeah, you would think. It's your eyeball juice protecting you. Here's the Google answer. People usually get rabies from the bite of a rabid animal. It is also possible, but very rare, for people to get rabies from non-bite exposures, which can include scratches, abrasions, or open wounds that are exposed to saliva or other potential infectious material from a rabid animal. So I'm assuming that means blood, which you're right. Nobody ever sprinkled, you know, blood on themselves after killing a rabid animal. But definitely saliva makes sense, just like you were saying with the Komodo dragon, the bacteria.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things you got to deal with in a lot of these zombie movies that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, where they kill something and then the zombie blood gets all over them and they're just like, okay, no problem, even though they wipe it out of their eyes. Because I'm pretty sure there's a scene in the original Dawn where Roger... the one that ends up dying anyways, I think there's a scene where he kills some zombies or maybe he's already been bit at that point, and so it don't matter anyways, but he gets blood like on his face and he's like rubbing it off. And it's just like, it's in your eye, son. I don't know how you survived that anyways.
The way I would be panicking, even if that wasn't how you got it, the way I'd be like, I can't.
It's okay for Ash to be covered in the Deadites' blood, because their virus don't spread that way. They don't really have a virus. It's possession-based.
You have to be
in
a
their
heathen.
Universe. Yeah, basically. All right, the two zombies with missing limbs, the jogger missing an arm and the legless zombie in the parking garage, are both played by actual amputees, which is exactly what they did in the original movie. If you had somebody's missing a leg, get somebody missing a leg.
Hell yeah.
It works. A lot of the actors playing zombies were carrying remotes in their hand to discharge a blood cannon placed in their back. This would activate an explosion behind them to simulate the effect of a gunshot to the head.
I wonder what that felt like. I wonder if it hurt or how bad I don't know. Like, was it a rough thing or was it just like this quick pop and first blood to spray everywhere? You has to be pretty impactful.
It would have to be enough to kind of startle you, but at the same, if you're controlling it, it's one of those weird things. It's like maybe that plays into the scene because whenever they get shot and they get a little bit startled, they can, you know, like do a little juke and jibe to make it look like they got hit, you know.
For me, it would be like I would hit the button and it wouldn't work. And then I'd hit it again, it wouldn't work. And I'd be like, son of a bitch. And then it would just randomly go off. I'd be like, cut. Fucking get her out of here.
Get this bitch out of here. She's already complaining about getting stitches in her arm, and now she can't fucking die. I think we mentioned this already, but director Zack Snyder actually personally chose most of the music that's in the film. The Man Comes Around, Richard Cheese's Down with a Sickness were amongst those, and Snyder was the only person who thought those songs should be in the film, as most producers were against it.
Well, they could fuck right off.
Yeah, I mean, you could say what you want about Zack Snyder. I mean, he's got some very good movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love The Watchmen. I love this movie. There's actually a few more. His Justice League wasn't too bad. It was better than Joss Whedon's version that came out.
Everybody agrees with that.
But Sucker Punch was fucking awful. Like, I don't know what happened to him. It's like, okay, I get it. You know, cute girls in, like, you know, anime style outfits, but they're also in a mental institution getting raped in the real world. That's weird, dude. You went somewhere with that movie, and I didn't like it.
They're really young looking girls, even though they're not in real life, but
yeah, it's got a heavy creep factor to it.
Well, he's definitely got that in the back of his head. So,
and Army of the Dead, which I think we discussed that we might cover this season, from him, it's not the greatest. I mean, especially after this movie, it's like, I mean, he went back to a similar universe with zombies, but it's not as good. So
I can count on half a hand how many movies I have consented to for this season. Everything
I said
else
we
like,
might cover.
Yeah,
it.
Everything else is like, hey, we're gonna do this next week, and I'm like, do we have to?
Yeah, but then you get the benefit of making me watch Hostel, and
that is true. Your time will come.
The Human Centipede, which God Almighty, I don't want to watch.
Yes.
CJ's elevator line, "I like this song," was improvised. There wasn't any music playing while they filmed that. But then, of course, they put Air Supply, you know, in there afterward, and it kind of fit. So
that sucks that they didn't have music playing right then and there. That would have been funny. I mean, I know that's funnier that he didn't have a song and he was just being a fucking, he was just joking, which is, I love, but like, if they started humming it, you know?
Yeah, if they all started doing something, but it'd be funnier if they were all humming different songs and somebody was like, hold up, this ain't gonna work.
Yeah.
While they were stocking up on ammunition in the gun store, the music from the gun store, like I said earlier, is the original from the original film can be played. That African chant music is it's in the movie. I looked for it after seeing this trivia, and it's in there.
Oh,
so.
Shit. I didn't even notice, to be honest. Which
it's
sucks.
Barely in there because you're more worried about the scene. The dog is in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
The girl is in trouble. Andy's a zombie. You're waiting for him to pop up somewhere, and it's a whole thing. So you're not really worried about that African chant that's going on in the background. In an aerial scene in the first 10 minutes when Anna's driving down a highway, the truck can be seen crashing into a gas station diner. Like I said, this is a reference to Night of the Living Dead, because it's what Ben talks about he saw before he got in the truck. Also, there's the helicopter. It says WGON, which is the same one that they were flying in the original Dawn of the Dead. Different colors of blood were used for the zombies in different stages of decomposition, which I like this attention to detail. Red for the recently deceased, browner version for the ones that have been dead for a few weeks, and then black oily version for the ones that's been dead for a considerable amount of time. Yeah,
that is awesome. I mean, it looks terrible, but good. Although, I feel like the old lady that had recently died, even though she, who knows how long she had been in that state, from our calculations, within 24 hours, but who knows? But she looked like she had black on her.
She looks like shit to begin with. So let's just throw that out there. I mean, She looked like a zombie before she ever became one.
That is
like,
true.
When they wheeled her in there, I would have put, I mean, if it had been me, I'd been like, does anybody know her? Does anybody care if I put a bullet in her?
Yeah, well, she's got to go for our safety and for our food supply. If nothing else, tell me I'm wrong. I said it.
You're not wrong. I would like to know how she ran so quick, given the fact that her bulk was still a predominantly limiting factor. I mean, yes, she might not have the body aches anymore, but that weight is going to keep her from running like a marathon person.
Wait a second. Do you think if we became zombies, we wouldn't hurt anymore?
That would be, well, depends on which universe you're talking about, because when we get to Return of the Living Dead, that's the secret for why they eat brains, because when they eat brains, the pain of rotting doesn't affect them anymore. Okay. So they're in constant agony as zombies until they eat brains, and then they feel good for like a few minutes. It's like a quick, you know, numbing of the rotting pain.
They're just little Darth Vaders walking around in constant pain, being miserable.
Yeah, so don't blame them for wanting to, you know, devour your brains. They're just trying to feel better, okay. You know. Like the crackheads in San Francisco.
Oh, God.
Universal significantly slashed the film's budget after the failure of House of the Dead, fearing that there was no public appetite for zombie movies, which is hilarious because even though House of the Dead came out in 2003 and bombed, we've already said Shaun of the Dead, this, and Land of the Dead all came out like back to back to back.
Yeah.
So it's like, and this is right after, which it's not technically a zombie movie, but 28 Days Later came out and inspired Snyder to make this movie. So it did pretty well too. I mean, there was still zombie, you know, fans out there.
Yeah.
I think The Walking Dead has done more to kill the zombie thing than anything else, but
we haven't talked about reviewing House of the Dead, and I don't know that we're going to. We're definitely going to have another zombie season. I think we know that already. Like, we know that's going to be down the line.
We really could. We're going to try to hit the highlights this season, yes, so that maybe it can be forever before we come back to it for your sake, yeah, if nothing else.
Well, but we could. I imagine that if we did a next season, we could do a lot of foreign zombie films, because there's a lot of good foreign ones.
Oh, there's quite a bit, yeah, actually, yeah.
But going back to House of the Dead, I don't know if you want to unofficially say anything about that. From what I remember, I thought I liked it, but what I liked the most about it, and this is going to be a spoiler, but kind of not, because it's not a spoiler to the story, and it wouldn't be a surprise for anyone to hear this, but the closing credits was basically the game. Going around, like, do you remember that? Am I wrong? I could have sworn it was them going around basically shooting zombies, like it's playing the game.
I honestly don't remember anything from that movie. If I watched it, I only watched a bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
What I remember more, and I don't know if it was the typing of the dead or if it was I played one way or the other, the retro like grindhouse game that they did for House of the Dead.
Oh, that was fun.
That thing was so much fun because you had like the old like 70s stereotypes, like the one black cop that almost, I don't even think he was a cop. I think he was a straight up pimp, and he was like, you know, and he had like the dolomite or the black dynamite type, you know, dialogue and all that stuff. And I mean, like, you know, it had the Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, grindhouse like stuff going on. Cause they really just watched Grindhouse and said, let's just make House of the Dead into that. And it worked perfectly, you know.
I forgot. We had our kids. It was during COVID. We had our kids playing that because we wanted them doing typing because, you know, they weren't learning a lot during that time. Everything was remote.
It's really good for typing. Like, oh, yeah. Really good.
Oh, yeah. If you want to live, you better fucking type. But I forgot what word my son learned. And we were just like, just don't mind that word. Just keep typing, okay? Just keep typing.
Oh yeah, they've got some really funny ones that pop up through that because like sometimes they match what's going on screen, and whenever the one of the characters is like with a group of whores or something, like there's a bunch of words that you have to start typing that are like they're pretty funny for the scene.
Oh yeah.
But anyways, with an opening weekend take of $26.7 million, Dawn of the Dead almost matched its $28 million budget in its first 3 days of release. So that's pretty good sign.
Oh yeah, definitely.
By the end of production, 3,000 zombie makeup effects had been created.
By the end of what? Oh, production. Ooh, okay. Yeah.
So the original had 200 zombies that took what do we say, 3 hours or something, to and we kind of fell in the line of hoping that that was like for everybody because they didn't really do a whole lot except for the main zombies.
Yeah.
But this one had 3,000 at one point near the end.
That's so fucking sick.
Zack Snyder said that the reason his zombies run at full speed is because he wanted to avoid the inherent comic impression given by slow shuffling undead. And this was inspired by 28 Days Later, as I said. I get it. Running zombies are scary as fuck, and they do make them effective in this movie. But I agree with Romero. If they're running, then they're not technically dead. They should be like, you know, rabies humans or something like that case.
Yeah, if it's some kind of...
Or just very recently dead, like within a day, because once the rot sets in, they should start like slowing down at some point.
They get what? What did we say? 2 weeks is their limit?
Yeah, yeah. And then after that, they should be shuffling and doing all that. And then eventually degrading, you know, down to nothing. I mean, that's if you're... Because, I mean, unless the... Somehow the zombie virus is like cancer in the sense that it, you know, perpetuates itself and it keeps the body from like ultimately, you know, decaying all the way through. They would eventually just fall apart from putrescence. Yeah. I mean, like just in a puddle of just like maggots and whatever. And then like vultures would come down and then we'd have zombie vultures at that point.
No, so. I don't like the zombie vultures. That is not okay. But I do like the fact that vultures do come down and start picking them apart because, I mean... You know, these zombies got to go. And they're still going to be creating zombies because there's still going to be an idiot like me that gets bit by accident. You know, we didn't mean to.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. You don't want to overthink these movies, but at the same time, I mean, they tend to be more science-based in a lot of their explanations. And it's kind of weird that they go with a supernatural reason for why they're just still around like 30 years on, like shuffling around. It's like, you know, that buddies, I mean, you could maybe argue that in like a northern climate, but like you get down to Florida, those zombies are going to fall apart within a few days.
Yeah.
Like that humidity down there would just do them in.
They're going to swell. They're going to implode. And let's be honest, red meat and like solely as your only nutritional like intake is terrible. Not even a vegetable. So they're just eating all this red meat and they're just supposed to be okay? I don't think so.
Yeah, all that oxidation with nothing to offset it. Yeah,
and it's not like us humans are gut-loading ourselves. It's not like we have an abundance of vegetables and nutrients. We're eating whatever we can to survive as well, you know?
And the one animal that, I mean, the animals that eat the herbivores, as it were, the zombies don't even care about in most movies. So, yeah. This is a weird one. Heather Langenkamp, who was obviously Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street, was actually a member of the production crew. I remember seeing her name actually at the end of the movie whenever I was looking. And
that's kind of cool.
Up, you know?
Was her husband doing effects on the film? Because
I'm sure that's the reason. Because she, any movies that she's done in the past, like I want to say since New Nightmare, has been pretty much whatever her husband was working on as a, you know, makeup artist, basically.
Yeah.
This is the first movie to broadcast the first 10 minutes uncut on network TV 5 days before its nationwide release. The showing was broadcast on USA Network in America and on Channel 4 in the UK with a special introduction by film critic and major horror fan Mark Kermode. I remember seeing this because this was actually what got me to watch this movie in the theater. I don't know if I was... I think I was already hyped to watch it anyways, but when I watched that first 10 minutes on TV, I was like, if they're showing this in the first 10 minutes, just like, you know, how Savini said about the first movie, the original movie, about, you know, the head exploding or whatever in the apartment building.
Yeah.
When I saw that little girl ripping Anna's husband's throat out and then all the chaos that ensued after that, I was like, if that's in the beginning of the movie, we're going to be in for a treat. So I was hyped big time for this movie.
FYI, yes, her husband was involved with a lot of the killing effects, if you will, for Dawn of the Dead.
That makes sense.
Yep.
I figured he was on there somewhere for her to... I just didn't know that she was involved with doing makeup effects with him. I mean, that's kind of cool that she's, you know, involved in that side of the business.
Yeah, there's apparently a feature... It's called Creating the Dead, Killing Time at the Mall, the special effects of Dawn of the Dead. Oh, wait. It says 2017, but maybe that's when the film, the interview came out, I should say.
Yeah.
Not so much, obviously, the film. Let me see. They get to see several of the makeup sessions, and David tells some of the nice stories about his favorite and hardest zombies to create. If you enjoy a fan of the, if you're a fan of the film, you'll certainly enjoy the footage. So yeah, basically they got to do an interview of them while they were kind of preparing, and helping make the movie. So that's kind of cool.
It was probably on Scream Factory's release of the movie on Blu-ray, because I think that came out around 2017. Yeah. And then just this past year, they came out with a 4K version of that. So
pretty cool.
Writer James Gunn claims that he received a massive amount of fan backlash and even death threats when assigned to the film. Most of the hate messages claimed the hack who wrote Scooby-Doo movies shouldn't be in charge of Dawn of the Dead. Those Scooby-Doo movies were pretty good.
Yeah.
James Gunn made this movie pretty awesome with his writing, and the Guardians movie showed that the man, I mean, in addition to all this stuff, we're going to cover another of his zombie movies this season, but like, I mean, you can say what you want to about, like we said, about the creep factor of some of his tweets, but he can write movies.
Oh yeah.
You know, Zack Snyder's feature film directorial debut. The first scene of the movie is the first they shot, because this was Zack's first feature. He didn't realize that you don't shoot in order of what the script says. And that's what he did. You know, most movies actually have you working on the last scene first, and then you work your way, you know, wherever you need to based upon what sets are available. And he was just like, nope, first page, first scene, let's do this. And they're like, all right.
I mean, I've not understood. You may have explained to me before. I've not understood why they do shoot out of order.
It's really just budgetary reasons. Okay. I mean, I always go back to Rosemary's Baby for this one, because the reason they shot in New York was those scenes in New York, which are the very end of the movie, where she's running away from the cult, is because they had New York, they had it booked, and they had to get those scenes filmed immediately, because if they didn't, they were going to lose the access to it.
Yeah.
That's really the reason they do some of that stuff.
Okay.
If you got access to all the sets and you can film in order, and assuming, this is the other big assumption, assuming that your actors and actresses don't have like conflicting schedules, there's no reason why you can't film this way.
Yeah.
And I don't honestly know why, I mean, other than for pickups and stuff, why they film out of sequence anyways. I mean, the only thing I could think of is like, you know, say that, This is one reason why I could think of. Okay, say that they really need like a scene shot outside when it's sunny and great.
Yeah.
Maybe they only get like, they're in a place where it doesn't get that way very often, like in Vancouver, which is where they film a lot.
Okay.
And they're like, we've got our sunny day.
Yeah.
This is the middle of the movie. We don't care. Let's film this, and then we'll go back and shoot the other shit that we film inside, you know?
Yeah. That
makes sense.
Yeah. Even the way you're explaining that, I'm like, the people are contracted, and you're told to be there. It's not like they have a schedule right away where they're just like, on this day, we're shooting this, and on this day, maybe they do. I don't know. I don't make movies for a living. But, like, you're contracted, so you have to be there. And I know people have, you know, oh, I'm doing this film tough, you know?
Well, sometimes you don't have a luxury, especially as a new director. I mean, you gotta, if say Robert Englund's only there for 10 days, you get all the Freddy shots you can get in those 10 days and let him go and film, you know, Phantom of the Opera or whatever he's going to film, you know, in addition to your movie.
That makes sense. That's a good timeline of, okay, well, we have him for this many days, you know, that's a little different, but like, okay, what if this other one, oh, I gotta, you know, do this or I gotta do this. It's like, I can't accommodate all of you.
That was like two of the actresses that whenever we talked about Jason X or whatever, they were two of the actresses in that movie were filming some kind of sci-fi show at the same time together outside of that one. And they had to work around their two schedules to make that movie. That was like just one of the things.
Yeah.
And that happens all the time with these different actors and actresses. So I would say, I mean, it's the only other movie that we covered that was shot in order like this, I think, was The Devil and Daniel Webster, because they shot that movie in chronological order.
Yeah.
But It was mostly on set, so I think they could control everything. They didn't have to film out of order for any particular reason.
Yeah.
As many as 50 makeup artists would be working on transforming actors and the zombies for the days that required crowd scenes. That's way more than the 8 people that Savini had.
Way more than the 8 people, and they all looked really good. So,
yeah, they probably got. I mean, after the first couple of days, they probably figured they were probably reapplying, like, you know, like they had a wound for somebody to have like a face gash, and they would just, you know, take that off somebody and slap it on somebody else. They were probably doing that stuff to save on time.
Yeah.
Title designer Kyle Cooper used actual human blood when designing the film's opening and closing credit sequences.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. I don't know where you got the human blood from, so, I mean, that's kind of creepy there, Kyle. I guess kudos for the, you know, method way of doing that, but...
So I wonder if you would probably know more about this than I, but, like, if... When you donate blood, if there's a discard, you know, group, meaning, okay, well, this is no good. This got tainted somehow. Or you just think that would be like some kind of, what's the word I'm looking for to describe, like a biohazard almost?
They do screen for stuff, and they do have to reject so many of them for various reasons, so maybe. But a lot of the time, they screen those out before they ever do those anyways anymore. I mean, assuming that the person's being truthful, and you're hard-pressed to find somebody who's donating. I mean, unless they're just, I don't know, again, some zombie from San Francisco who's, you know, don't have any money and going in there to try to get some kind of benefit from it. I mean, most people are donating blood. They're just doing it to... you know, save a life. I mean, so they'll honestly answer the question, right? Do you have hepatitis? No, you know?
Yeah. Cause I know they're like, you can give blood with tattoos. Now I can't give blood because of the kind of insulin I've been on in the past, but yeah.
I think they overly screen, to be honest. I mean, they've got on there, have you taken an antibiotic? It's like, well, yeah, I had amoxicillin. Nope, you can't do it. You can't just get out right now. It's like, okay.
I'll leave, but you better give me my cookie and my free tickets to the theme park.
Makeup designer David Leroy Anderson scoured forensic books and crime scene photos for ideas on how best to convey the death and decay in the movie.
Nice. And that is what's-her-name's husband, isn't he?
She goes by her own last name, so maybe.
That's Heather Langenkamp's husband. That's him.
Okay. A veteran of largely independent films, Sarah Polley was surprised at how physical her role turned out to be. She said she had never run so much in any of her previous movies.
Oh, wow. No, I'm just kidding.
The production had a blood card on set all day due to the excessive amounts of fake blood that were being used.
Hell yeah.
Ving Rhames was always first choice for the part of Kenneth. They didn't go with anybody else. That's so awesome. In a deleted scene, Anna asked the same question as Francine did in the 1978 version. What are they doing? Why do they come here? About the zombies being attracted to the mall. And then Kenneth responds with the same response as Flyboy. Kind of instinct, memories perhaps. This was an important place in their lives. But then he adds, maybe they just come here for us, you know?
Possibly.
And he's probably right.
Yeah, and like we joke about it now, or at least I was about how malls aren't a place of gathering really anymore.
No, and if they had memories now, they wouldn't go to malls. I mean, yeah. That's the funny thing. I don't know where people would associate anymore, though. That's a sad statement about society, but...
We said Walmart. I don't...
Yeah, Walmart probably. I mean, and I guess grocery stores, but I think Shaun of the Dead has probably the modern zombie figured out, because there's several zombies that are sitting there with like iPods, just shuffling down the street with the iPod, you know, with the headphones in. And I'm like, that's probably what modern zombies would do until they would sit there with phones that wouldn't work and like tapping on them, you know, like Jeff did as a zombie in Community.
Listening to smooth jazz, of course.
Yeah, because that calms the pain of being dead somehow. The name of Ving Rhames' character, Kenneth, is an obvious nod to actor Ken Voorhees, who played, you know, the original character of Peter in Dawn of the Dead.
Yep.
The scene between Sarah Polley, Mekhi Phifer, Jane Eastwood, and Kim Poyer at the Hallowed Grounds Cafe was rewritten in order to include actress Kim Poyer to give her more screen time, since director Zack Snyder and producer Eric Newman enjoyed her performance so much. However, her character's name is never once mentioned throughout the entire film. Also, most unfortunate, a lot of her dialogue scenes were trimmed or eliminated from the film, such as the dinner scene. So they liked her, but apparently when they went to editing, they was like, we got to cut somebody, and she's not important to the plot. So
what performance would you say they enjoyed the most? Because I could think of
her
one.
Her getting banged by the douchebag, I mean, in that one scene. I mean, and that's really all you really need to see from Monica anyways in the movie.
With all their clothes on.
I mean, it was a little bit classy, you know, a little bit cheesecake scene there for you. The shot where they throw a wrapped body off the mall's roof was filmed across the street from a church funeral service.
Hell yeah.
An extra on the DVD release for the film, We Interrupt This Program, a fake newscast depicting the start and spread of the zombie infection, contains some characters whose dialogue consists of lines from the original Dawn of the Dead and Night of the Living Dead. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's, you know, extra they threw on the DVD release of it.
Hold on. I want to circle back. We need to circle back. They threw a fake body off the mall roof, and there's a church across the street. I don't remember seeing. Well, I guess they would have edited it out, but
but the church was performing a funeral service when they filmed that.
Hell yeah. It just seems like such a big parking lot that I wouldn't have imagined that a church would, like, any of the people would have been able to see that.
They might not have, but I mean, it's still.
It's funny, though.
It's almost in poor taste, but whatever. At 1 hour and 24 minutes, someone, after a test screening, questioned Snyder as to why the zombies paused at the bottom of the stairs, and it put him on the spot when they asked if the zombies could even do that, and he replied, in real life, no, but in a film where you just dramatize, so the zombies would have just kept running, but he had them stop for a second, you know?
Yeah.
It is what it is.
And is that where, I'm trying to think,
I want to say that's when they're trying to get back inside the place, and douchebag has kept the door locked on them, and they have to smash their way in.
Okay, and that makes sense, because I feel like that was part of the trailer, like part, actually even on commercial, where you just kind of see them all pile up, and it's like, go! It's kind of like when you're drinking a glass of an ice drink, and the ice just holds back, and then all of a sudden they all go, like, charge! That's what it reminded me of.
That's a pretty good analogy for that. That's kind of what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
The group in the mall had named the two parking shuttles. The first one, holding Nicole, CJ, Michael, and Anna, were named the Pinta. The one carrying Terry, Kenneth, Steve, Glenn, and Monica was named the Santa Maria.
The Santa Maria.
That's what I was thinking whenever I read that.
Oh, my God.
Nathan Fillion actually auditioned for the role of Michael. I'm glad that they got the actor they did, because like I mentioned before, whenever we were talking about him, he has this vulnerable, almost like depressed, like, character that you're interested in, and which fit the role of Michael, who apparently was a father who lost his kid. Nathan Fillion is fine, but I get more comedy out of his performances, and I know that's intentional because he plays comedy for James Gunn, but still I don't know that I've ever, even in Slither, but Slither's also a comedic movie. I don't know that I've ever seen, he's a bad guy in Buffy in one of the last seasons, and he plays a pretty good bad guy, so maybe he could have been fine on that. I just don't see Nathan Fillion playing that character the same way.
Yeah, I'm looking at what movies he's been in, I don't really recognize him.
His TV work is where you,
of TV work.
Was it Castle? Wasn't that what he was on, like, for the biggest time? I mean,
yeah, but I never seen that. He was also on Firefly. It looks like he was one of the main characters. I never seen Firefly.
He's really good in Firefly, but even then, he's more of like an action hero in that movie. So I still don't get like the vulnerable. I mean, it might've fit the part of Michael where Michael's like the, you know, the charismatic, like, I'll get you to you know, be a better person than you are with how he did with CJ. That I could see Nathan playing that part right, but I don't know about the rest of it.
He's in the Santa Clarita Diet, which is pretty funny because that's zombie related.
It is. That's kind of a weird one. I thought the first season of that was okay, but then it kind of started, I don't know, the second season was more of the same, and I just kind of bailed on it.
Yeah.
The music playing in the mall when the survivors first arrive is, as you said, Don't Worry, Be Happy, just yeah, like the mall music version of it.
There's a lot to worry about.
The DVD box text implies that the cause of the zombie plague is a virus, but in an interview, James Gunn denies the virus theory, stating the zombie bite is like a vampire bite, and it's totally supernatural, and there's no science behind it. So,
okay,
whatever. And that would, the whole bite thing that we discussed earlier, or getting blood, I mean, if it's supernatural, then you'd have to pass it through a bite, I guess. That's the reason that the blood getting in the eyes won't matter in this movie. This was the only film Zack Snyder has directed in a studio other than Warner Brothers, at least until 2021 when he released Army of the Dead under Netflix. So he had a pretty exclusive time working for Warner Brothers after this movie. The mall scenes in the film, as well as the rooftop scenes, were shot in the Thornhill Square Shopping Center in Thornhill, Ontario. And they've shot several of the other scenes in different like neighborhoods in Ontario after that. The set for Anna and Lewis's bedroom was constructed in the back room of the mall, and the mall itself was defunct, which is the reason the production used it. The movie crew completely renovated the structure and stocked it with fictitious stores after Starbucks and numerous other corporations refused to let their names be used. The two exceptions to this are Roots and Panasonic. They still allowed to be, you know, their names associated with it.
I think that was a big mistake to not allow. And this is 2004. It's not like this was the 80s or even the 90s. I think it was a big mistake. Like, I would die if somebody was like, hey, you know, we're going to do this film, blah, blah, blah. And I heard it was a remake, and I'm like, fuck yeah. I mean, clearly Toyota, I know that they have to contact brands to use, like, specifically, like, cars. Toyota was in there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I think it's funny because Starbucks, to me, they like to play that they're like this upstanding brand, but some of the shit that they've done like over the course of their history, like their image is totally removed from like what they actually do. So for them to be so snooty is kind of stupid, in my opinion.
It's honestly their loss. I'm glad they didn't allow it because fuck you, you know?
This is awful though. Most of the mall was demolished shortly after the film was shot. So they put all that work into making these like the place look, cause we mentioned how clean that mall
was. Oh yeah.
They did that. They made that look that nice. And then somebody came in and tore it down.
I don't understand. But at the same time, what were they going to do with that mall? Because there are some gorgeous malls, specifically in Las Vegas, that are almost abandoned. You could still go. There's like 3 stores open. Why at this point? I don't even know. But like, they're gorgeous still, but it's like nobody comes to them.
You actually start up a hallowed grounds and you, and that's where you started at is in that mall. And then you branch out from there.
That'd be so cool.
They shot the blackout scene during an actual blackout, like I said earlier. It was a coincidence, and they had generators. So,
you know what I was just thinking about, speaking of malls? Halloween Horror Nights, remote locations at empty malls, and almost every store, if not all of them, is a fucking house.
So you're saying take Halloween Horror Nights and do like Spirit Halloween does and like find abandoned malls and just like do pop-up locations?
Yes.
That would actually be pretty
cool.
That
would be sick. And then they charge you a premium to get into these. I mean, how much do we pay to go to Halloween Horror Nights? And don't charge that much because this is a mall, you know? And just charge something close to it because I don't know how much I pay per ticket to go to Halloween Horror Nights. But I would pay, you know, up to $75 a person to go
and eat. So you're saying that the roaming hordes could be zombies, and then the individual stores could each be their own little glimpse in the hell, basically.
Yeah,
so,
each different like location, each, whatever they want. It could be, one could be Saw-related, one could be, you know, and it doesn't even have to be, you don't even need ones where it's where you got to buy the IP, because obviously you got to charge more if you do that. It could just be a bunch of, you know, different types of houses, you know, angry nurses over here that look like the ones from Silent Hill, and only small-waisted, big-titty girls can apply for that, you know?
Hey, there's hints that that might be what they're bringing this year to HHN.
We're not going to be able to go this year, for sure we're not, but oh my God, that would be so fun. Noah would not be allowed to go, but yeah, I would have a great time.
They have confirmed, though, that they're going to have, unless it something happens last minute and pulls it out, they're going to have Nightmare on Elm Street because it's the 40th anniversary.
That's awesome.
The destruction at Fort Pastor is hinted at early on when the news footage from the base clearly shows several infected victims sporting bite wounds and other mutilations being brought in via trucks. So,
oh, yeah.
The opening originally featured a transition from the Universal logo into the sun, but while Snyder loved it, Newman reminded him that they needed to fit the Strike logo somewhere after Universal, so boo on that.
Okay.
I hate that because I always love it whenever – I actually like it when they do something fun with the Universal logo itself, because Universal's is pretty cool about that, like Happy Death Day, for instance. It repeats itself, you know. It's like, and then on part two of that, it splits into multiverse versions of the symbol.
Okay.
It just kind of sucks whenever they it's like, no, we got to have this other little small independent studio that helped produce this. We got to have their logo somewhere. It's
put
like,
it somewhere
all
right, else. Fuck.
Put it. I don't like fade into it at a little bit later or something. I mean, come on now. The swerving cop car that almost hits Anna's car actually almost hit the car in real life. The fishtailing back in was not planned.
No, damn.
The script is credited to James Gunn, but Newman adds that Scott Frank and Michael Tolkien did some work on it as well. It's got a lot of James Gunn's humor, though, so yeah. I feel like he had the bulk of it. Newman asked in the commentary where the mother was when they were pointing the handgun at the baby. And Snyder's response, it was a real baby, or at least in one scene or something. And Snyder's response is a joke, but feels truthful at the same time. She was there saying, I love show business and I want my baby to be part of this.
Oh, yeah.
Is what he said. They're pointing a gun at your baby. I just love show business. I want my baby to be in this with a gun to its head. They painted Bruce Bond's ribs, Andy, to make him look scrawnier and hungrier, you know, toward the end of, like, his misery before he gets bit, so.
Yeah, because he, yeah.
Yeah, it sucks for him. I know they were too far apart, but you could have, why couldn't they? There was nowhere in that mall that they could have got like a little remote controlled car or something that they, maybe it didn't have enough range though to get it. I don't know. I just feel like the dog was like the worst of all possible ideas to get food to him.
Oh yeah. I didn't think about that. I mean, cause like if there's got to be somewhere where even if there's several, because yes, that might be hard to kind of, you know, maneuver and maybe it would lose things or something like that. Or that would have made sense where you had to have enough time with the door open and the zombie got through, or I don't know, but I have no idea. I was thinking too, like, wasn't there any of those fucking t-shirt cannons that could have fucking shot food over to him, you know?
I just always think back to Tremors 2 where they're like killing some of the graboids with like remote controlled cars because Earl and his buddy that's in that movie, the idiot, they're like running the remote controlled cars out there with C4 and the graboids pick them up and then they blow them up that way. It's like you could do that to zombies, run the remote controlled car out there. If nothing else, just run it to a group of them and then just set it off. I mean, you know.
I know
they didn't have C4. I'm just saying that, you know, if you had access to stuff like that, that's the way to go after a zombie horde. I mean, that's the smart way to do it.
Yeah. Was there no way to, like, set them ablaze, and were they afraid to do that? Because both of the buildings were made out of brick. It wouldn't have been easy to have them burn down.
Well, they were freely setting on fire toward the end of the movie, anyways, right next to their vehicles, no less. I mean, they didn't care about the fire. I mean, necessarily. Yeah.
Maybe they just weren't thinking about it. I don't know. There's so much. Because I kept, every time I see him across the way, you know, where he's hungry and everything, I'm thinking, what can they do to get food to him besides lowering the puppy down, you know?
Well, and it makes me wonder, too, like, I feel like I'd have to watch it again. How close was his building to the building beside of him? Because they were fairly close in height. Mm-hmm. Like, could he not, like, come up with some kind of board or something to be able to try to cross over and maybe see if there was food in that building beside of him? I mean, you know.
But then you don't know how infested.
Zombies were in there. Yeah,
he knows how fortified his building is, you know, but not everyone else's. I mean, he's got an armory, so obviously, you know, he has to protect it from people trying to get in general, let alone zombies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which would necessitate gates, which you don't see in the movie, but that's a whole other thing. Whatever. Moving on.
We're not talking about that.
David Cronenberg's sister, Denise, was the costume designer for this film. Oh, so nice. That's kind of cool. In the opening scene where Anna's driving with an overhead view, we've already talked about the helicopter in that scene. Sarah Polley was the first choice to play Anna, so it's pretty good whenever you get the person that you wanted for the part. The first scene in the basement finishes when Michael burns the zombies with fuel from the gas station and CJ's lighter. Some people think that might be a wink and a nod to George Romero's Night of the Living Dead because, you know, the gas pump, the fire, the zombies burning, you know, just like Tom and Judy getting burned alive. That sort of thing.
It looks so cool because the zombies, whoever is caught on fire that's on the fence is like still snarling and biting at them. And I'm like, good job, man. That looks hella cool.
I've heard stories about how that feels being in one of those burn suits. Yeah. I mean, they say that you can feel the heat and it's one step away from being uncomfortable, but it's just enough to where you can tolerate it.
Well, mentally, you know that you're on fire.
Yeah, and that's the part that they have to fight the most because if they fall around, the fire will actually get more oxygen and then actually might spread into their face and stuff. So they've got to play it cool because the areas that are covered up with the it's some kind of like almost lubrication or something that like is, you know, keeps the fire away.
Some thick ass gel.
But they have to play it like super cool, like they can't like move a lot or anything.
Yeah.
Snyder points out in the commentary that in the neighborhood and the overhead shot, there's an entire row of homes with no road access and driveways that just stand at a fence of some kind. The helicopter didn't get the widest shot they wanted, so they had to work something up in post-production. So if you want to look that deep into it, that's the reason there's a neighborhood that kind of looks like it was not really a real neighborhood, more of an uncanny valley, but, you know, whatever you had to do. Some viewers questioned Nicole's decision to face zombies in an attempt to rescue the dog Chip, but at least one pop superstar agrees with her. When I was talking to Christina Aguilera at the premiere, she said, "I would have gone after the dog too. I was really nervous about the dog, and then whenever I saw Nicole was going after the dog, I thought that's real." Yeah. So Christina Aguilera agrees that you don't let Chip just go over and get eat.
Yeah, so. La Llorona agrees too. La Llorona. And not only that, I would have had some food in my bag because I would have been like, okay, well, since I'm going and this is going to fucking happen, I'm going to at least make sure I get some more food to this motherfucker.
Yeah, if you're going to be running anyways, why not try to help Andy out? But, I mean, he's already been bit at that point, so you're up the creek anyways.
Did she know at this point? Or was she just...
She didn't because she was running over there or she was in the vehicle and she was on her way over there whenever they saw the situation where the zombie made it in the door.
Yeah.
So she was freaking out just trying to get over there in the vehicle at that time. She wasn't watching anything.
She don't give a shit.
The stores in the mall all have fake names. Some of Snyder's favorites are the bookstore called Bookmark and, of course, Hallowed Grounds. They named the department store after Galen Ross, of course, from the original movie. 40 minutes shorter than George Romero's original director's cut for Dawn of the Dead. It's the director's cut does go on for a while for the original movie. for years, that's the one that I always prefer to watch just because it adds more scenes to that one where, it, like, the cops are escaping on that dock and you see more of them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. In recent years, it's like, I mean, it kind of drags the movie on a little bit. I don't know. It's the older I get, the less time I have to waste on just bullshit, I guess. That's about everybody, though.
Yeah.
Sarah Pauli and Louis Ferreira gave Snyder grief over the shower scene, saying that no one really kisses in the shower, and they're wrong, because when you kiss underwater, or, well, with water pouring on you, especially with steam and stuff, you feel like you're drowning.
Yes, so that's, thank you. You know. I saw that. I was like, okay. And then, but I was thinking that she works a weird ass job, and she's supposed to cover a lady's shift with, thank God the zombie apocalypse happened, because I fucking hate working Sundays, you know? I would have been like, oh, sorry, Tina. I know you're probably not even alive to get this message, but I'm not going to make it. There's a zombie apocalypse. Yeah, so you're going to have to cover your own shift at the hospital still alive. I do recommend staying away from the hospital. That's where most of them are right now. Anyway, see you next week, girl.
Her reason for having to do that double shift was stupid anyways, because her girlfriend at work there was getting the man, basically.
Oh, like, yeah.
The whole excuse. Okay. She's like, oh, he's got a date.
But that further kind of proves my point that the reason why they were getting freak nasty in the shower is because you have to get it in where you can. And it's just one of those moments where, like, oh, my God, we have time. And they start just making out. That's the only thing I could justify, because she's working hours. I don't know what he does for a living, if they ever go over. He looks like a stay-at-home husband, because he's like, oh, look what I got on the DVD for us, or DVR.
That is true. The bumping uglies isn't the problem. It's just that they're kissing. I mean, sex in the shower, that's one thing, but making out in the shower doesn't really happen that often.
My husband be trying to do that. Honey, quit. I can't breathe. Every time I pull away, it's not because I hate you. It's I want to live.
I don't want to be waterboarded while we're trying to do other things.
Dang.
Linda Booth, who played Nicole, and Kevin Zegers, who played Terry, previously played love interest the year before in the movie Wrong Turn, 2003.
Oh, so. Shit. Didn't I say something about that movie? Like, is that one we were going to review?
We never got around to them. When we go back to slasher season, we've got every stinking Wrong Turn movie to cover when we go back to it. So. Yeah.
Okay.
Lindy Booth was portrayed as younger than Sarah Pauli, even though they are the same age. So that must have made Sarah Pauli, who played Anna, feel just a little like shit. It's like, okay, she looks younger, so she's going to be younger than you. You look haggard and old. Deal with it. You know, it's like.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
I mean,
she didn't look haggard. If anything, Sarah Pauli just looked more mature, because she was in a more mature position, meaning she's a nurse. You can be a super young nurse, and being a nurse will take a toll on you, you know?
Yeah.
So
it kind of ages you. I can understand that. It's just funny that they were exactly the same age, and one was supposed to be a kid, or, you know, a younger kid versus the other one.
I'm an old-ass accountant, but you put me next to a nurse that's 20 years younger than me, I'm going to be like, yeah, that's the adultier one right there. We need to – that one.
Again, this was inspired by 28 Days Later. But in 28 Days Later, they never really show the infected people as eating other people. Humans, they just spread their virus by, you know, their blood. However that ends up on you, then you become one of them in that movie.
I feel like there's a 28 Days Later that Donnie G would review. Like, that's how God. They spread the virus.
No. We're not talking about Red Wings. Don't go that. Don't go there. Don't talk about it.
It doesn't have to be that. It could be the money shot and it gets in the eye and, you know.
Okay, that's a little bit different, at least. When I mentioned blood and you're going on Donnie G's movies, I'm like, nope, we're not earning a Red Wings. We're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The televangelist who delivers the iconic "The Dead Will Walk the Earth" is, he, like I said before, he's actually blaming the dead rising on the sins of the people within the movie, the sex out of wedlock between Monica and Steve, killing unborn children, which is a zombie baby, and then the man-on-man relations, which was Glenn, you know. So,
yeah.
There was actually MTV host zombies in this movie for some weird reason. The UK MTV host Alex Zane was in the movie, as well as VJ Ian Robinson had an uncredited cameo as a zombie. Maybe Zack Snyder had some like connections or something with MTV formerly. Yeah, I don't know, but it's weird that there was a lot that was in this movie for some weird reason.
Okay.
The last zombie that you see at the end of the opening credits is the director himself.
Oh, that's cool. So I didn't even know that.
Snyder isn't sure what to think about the shot of Nicole checking out Terry's ass as he walks away from her. It kind of makes me uncomfortable. She's looking at it and smirking. Like, what's that even mean? Maybe she's into pegging. I don't know what that means. I mean, she likes International Women's Day. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
One of the store's names in the mall is Metropolis, which is funny because yes. Zack Snyder, you know, went on to direct Man of Steel, and James Gunn is going to have his own Superman film. So there you go.
Was Metropolis a sports store?
Yeah, I believe it was.
Yeah, it reminded me of Champ Sports or something, but I was like, why do they keep calling it Metropolis? When I heard Metropolis, I was thinking it was more like an area of the mall, not so much a store, but yeah.
Yeah. While Zack Snyder was under a contractual obligation to deliver an R-rated final cut to Universal, he expected that the movie would get an NC-17 rating for graphic violence, and then he'd have to edit it. But to his surprise, the MPAA said, yeah, R-rating, do it. That's when George Romero saw it. He's like, if this gets an R rating, then I can finally make another zombie movie and not have to worry about cutting the shit out of it. And so that's why he went ahead with Land of the Dead.
Hell yeah.
Towards the end of the movie, when the survivors get into the elevator to escape the zombies, they all go quiet. Music can be heard. That's Air Supply's All Out of Love. It's funny because James Gunn, who wrote the screenplay, also directed Slither, and he used Air Supply's Every Woman in the World as a major theme throughout the film. God. So a lot of Air Supply going on. For the graphic scene in which Monica is accidentally chainsawed to death, which let's comment on that. That's the one thing Michael does that's stupid in this movie is he thinks that he's got this cool idea with getting the zombies off the side of the truck with a chainsaw sliding back and forth. You realize that this thing is going to be in motion, getting rocked constantly. Why do you think an openly revving chainsaw, if they would, if he would have had some way to attach it and then, you know, it would be locked in place and then they slide it back and forth, fine. But for them to hold it and then it not slip back like it does in the movie, I'm just like, now when I watch that part, I'm like, as soon as I see Michael and he's like, I got something cool. I'm like, no, you don't. And you're going to get somebody killed. Put that shit away right now. You know, that's what I think every time I see it.
Oh, my God.
Chainsaws are not that effective. I mean, yes, they can chop limbs off if you're using them improperly, but they're actually very poor weapons, people. Well, they require gasoline, and they clog up pretty easy. Don't rely on them for anything.
They're going to fling zombie guts into your face. And not only that, these zombies need to be sawed at the head, not at the waist, because they're going to crawl. Now you got a half zombie fucking coming after you. And those fuckers, for some reason, are fast when they lose their legs.
Well, and not only that, but you lose sight of them, and then they creep up on you, and they bite your ankle, and there you are. You're a fucking zombie.
There you go. I mean, fucking losers.
Anyways, for that scene where she gets chainsawed to death, the full body cast was made of the actress, which included a reloadable cartridge down the area that was to be chainsawed. This was then packed solid with blood bags. This meant that the cartridge could be taken out and reloaded for each take. So they were just take after take, just brrr, and just like blood splatting everywhere.
Hell yeah.
Constantly. According to the lost tape, which contains gun shop owner Andy's personal video diary, which is a bonus feature on the director's cut DVD, the main characters arrive at the mall early in the movie on May the 9th. Therefore, the movie opens a day earlier on May the 8th. Andy mentions that attacks on citizens by the undead had already started on the 7th, which makes sense because if you start the movie on the 8th, Anna is seeing people come into the hospital who've already been bitten.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she doesn't know it, but that's part of it. And he makes his last entry just before he turns into one of the undead on June the 6th. And the movie ends on that same day, not including the footage during the post-credit scenes. This places the events of the movie in a space of just 29 days. So,
wow,
all of that death takes place in just 29 days. And all those zombies, too, because you think about it, at the end of the movie, how many were outside of that mall? A lot of people died very quickly within that 30 days, like super quick.
I just imagine, like, Noah and I would be done for because, like, one of our kids would get bitten by someone at school or something, and then the other kid would bite the other kid, or one of the kids would be asleep while the other one comes into our room and tears us apart. I think about these things. I don't know why. And I'm like, I wouldn't have to worry about running out of insulin.
Yeah, zombies don't need to worry about their pancreas. Mm-mm. They're on an all-protein diet.
Yeah.
But I
hate you.
The zombie baby scene was originally going to portray the baby killing the mother. It was then altered due to its graphic nature. They did so much worse in this movie. Let the baby eat its way out of her. I don't even know why. We've discussed this. I don't know why she was even still alive. She took the longest of anybody. And maybe it was because it went straight to the baby first. Because what is it? You share most of your blood with the fetus during most of the pregnancy. I mean, I don't know. That's still pushing it, but still, I mean, if you go that route, if she was still alive and the baby like ate its way out of her stomach, that would have been a pretty cool scene. Just throwing it out there.
I think it would have too. But there is literally, isn't there a situation, a disorder? I don't know where, the baby is literally killing the mom. It's almost like a parasite.
Yes.
I forget what it's called. And babies, more than we know, almost take their moms out. My child almost did. And so it happens all the time. So why would this be any different, especially since you know that baby's going to be a zombie. And she looks like a zombie before she even dies.
Yeah, she was looking pretty bad right before she kicked the bucket.
She's
there.
She's fucking dying. So seeing a baby tear its way out of an already dead person would not have bothered me anyways.
I want to say that they reenacted that and actually had the baby ripping its way out of a body. And then it got goofy after that. And that one, it's that one show that's on Sci-Fi Channel. It's a Zombie Nation, or whatever it's called.
Z Nation.
Z Nation. There's a whole scene with zombie baby, like it's leaping on people out of nowhere.
That's
it's hilarious, but it's stupid.
The only thing that wouldn't make sense is I know that some babies can be born with teeth, but they're never born with a full set of teeth. Nails, on the other hand, they could be born with long nails, so maybe clawing its way out would be the only way I could imagine.
Okay, that would make sense.
Yeah, fingernails are the only, and hair obviously are the only thing I know that babies can acquire pretty long in the womb.
And finally, Ving Rhames came to them about starring in the film, as I said, because I want to be in a movie where the black guy lives, at least until the post-credits scene.
Yeah.
And then you're fucking dead.
And then you're thinking, well, we don't know.
There's a chance. But it ain't good.
And then you're going to be stuck out at sea with fucking, oh, God.
You're on a boat that's already caught fire twice. You have no water left. You have no food. You might just want to eat a bullet at that point. Just saying.
Ouch. I mean, if you're hungry.
Well, you'll have an eternal hunger otherwise.
Yes.
So what are your two options?
Yeah, that is true. But then his pains will be gone.
What is that? Well, in this universe, probably, mm-hmm. Yes, because they can run, so they obviously have no pain. So, yeah. All right, what are your final thoughts about the remake?
This is one of those remakes. I think we may have already kind of touched on it while reviewing the original Dawn of the Dead, but this is one of those remakes that I will watch. We watch this film all the time. This movie is on at least once every other month. I swear, whether it be on TV or whether it be on our digital library, it's fucking there. So, and it's a high up there. 4 out of 5 rotting corpses for me.
I would give it I don't want to get granular. I would probably say higher than that myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd go 4.5, but it's between a 4 and a 4.5, somewhere in that range.
Okay, so 4.3 maybe.
4.3, that's good enough. 4.3 out of 5. I mean, it's up there. I really like it. It's I don't know if I like it. I want to say that I like it better than Land of the Dead, and I think I do. But I would still rate Land of the Dead from Romero still pretty high up there too, because yeah. I know a lot of people don't like it as well as some of his previous stuff, but I feel like he was finally to the point where he could have fun with a studio movie, which yeah. he had never had the opportunity to do. And there's something about seeing him just go balls out in that movie. But anyways, like, you know, but this one's definitely a 4.3 in that range.
Yeah.
I was thinking about another movie the other day, and it's escaped me again. That's another good remake. But all those people out there that hate, like, remakes, I get it. There's some out there that are shit. But then sometimes you get some movies like this, mm-hmm. and then you're just like, it earns its place in, I watch both. I like the original and this one. And this does not take away from the original movie. It's actually a love letter to it in a lot of ways.
Well, for me, it definitely does. But... But that's okay, because one, I don't like older movies. Two, I don't generally like zombie movies. And I would say it's weird that I would even like the fast zombie movies, because they scare the fuck out of me. But, like, I don't know, man. This movie definitely has a place in my heart, so.
It's there's several remakes that get that same kind of love from me, so I don't get the remake hate. I just wish they'd start remaking bad movies, the original bad movies.
Oh, yeah.
And then actually improve them, because there's sometimes, like the Fog remake, it's like, you fucked it up. Like, you mm-hmm. majorly fucked it up. Like, what were you thinking with that shit? Like, I mean, the Fog is a good movie. It doesn't need remaking. But if you want to go back and remake, I'm trying to think of something that was really terrible. I mean, you could actually go back and, I mean, I don't hate it, but you could remake My Boyfriend's Back, and which they kind of did with Life After Beth, and then improve upon it. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's always the opportunity for that.
Definitely.
So, anyways, I believe next time we're going to actually cover the 28 Days Later and its sequel. Is mm-hmm. that what we discussed?
I think so. Okay. 28 Days and 28 Weeks. And then in a few years, we got 28 months or 28 years. Sorry, 28 years.
28 years later coming out.
That's fucking wild.
There's supposed to be another zombie. There's actually a zombie movie that's coming out this year, too, I think. So it's not a dead genre. It's still out there. I mean, it's just like its namesake. It keeps coming back over and over again. I think right now, even on... AMC, they're airing the Rick and Michonne Walking Dead spinoff, which I've heard yeah. is actually shit. But
oh, shit, really?
Yeah, that's what some people are saying. That one with Maggie and Negan, though, is actually supposed to be pretty decent for what it's worth.
Noah was watching that. He says it's really good.
But those are both great actors and actress, so, I mean, that would make sense. Anyways, with that, folks, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.